nice response.
Right, if you grab a Bible and turn to Exodus chapter 17, it's on page 72. I'll be reading from verse 8. This is the third talk in a series looking at the adventures of the Israelites in a month after they left Egypt, working their way through the promised land at what is obviously the start for them. They don't know it yet, but it's going to be a very, very long journey. At the moment, we're working as they work through the wilderness towards Mount Sinai. I'm not giving a massive recap on the last few talks. Are they online? They are online, or we can give you, if you haven't got the internet in this age, we can give you the paper copy of them. But basically, say 2 weeks ago with Tim, we saw that God provided his hungry people food in the wilderness in the shape of manna and quail. And last week with Simon, God provided his people who were thirsty water in the desert. Having led his people out of Egypt, God is miraculously, powerfully, and vividly showing that he is the Israelites' protector and provider. And today we'll see how God gave his people victory. And as we see, it's a victory in a battle that they had absolutely no right to win. Right, so let's read it. So it's Exodus chapter 17, verses 8 to 16. The Amalekites came and attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, "Choose some of our men to go out to fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hands." So Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. As long as Moses held up his hands, the Israelites were winning. But whenever he lowered his hands, the Amalekites were winning. When Moses' hands grew tired, they took up a stone and put it under him, and he sat upon it. Aaron and Hur held his hands up, one on one side, one on the other, so that his hands remained steady till sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with a sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this on a scroll as something to be remembered, and make sure that Joshua hears it, because I will completely blot out the name of Amalek from under heaven." Moses built an altar and called it, "The Lord is my banner." He said, "Because hands were lifted up against the throne of the Lord will be at war against the Amalekites for generation to generation." I'm going to look at this today in three parts. Firstly, we're going to go through the story together, and then we're going to leap forward. What is it? Well, this is from 1440 BC, so we believe. Leap forward to 33 AD and apply this to the crucifixion of Christ. And then look and see what this story actually means to us in 21st century London today, how we can apply it day by day. Right, so we start with, I love this bit, history and geography in one go. Geography lesson, got a map. Love it. Right, so they started here. Look at this. Right, they start here, they work their way through here, down here, and they are here at Rephidim at the moment. And they fight the Amalekites. The Amalekites come from here. Now, the Amalekites are Edomites. Now, Edomites means that in the same way that the Israelites were sons of Jacob, I should know this, sons of Jacob, the Amalekites were Edomites, and that means they were sons of, thank you, Esau. Does anyone know why Esau became known as Edom? Yes. Do you know why it became known as, why it was red? No, it's because of the stew he made. He's the only man, it must be the only country ever named after food, apart from Turkey. So, right, so if you particularly really want to know why, Amalek was the grandson of Esau. And yes, his dad was called Eliphaz, and he was the son of Eliphaz's concubine Timna. I know you guys were desperate to know that. And they ruled an area, the Edomites as a whole, from the bottom of the Dead Sea right the way to the Gulf of Aqaba. Now, we don't know why the Amalekites who were here were suddenly here. It could be that they were like just a wandering people, nomads, and they went from town to town to seek truth. Let's be honest, I don't know if any of you have been here. There really isn't a lot here. It's called the wilderness for a reason. So we don't really know why they're here. They might have just been going raiding parties. The other thing, they may have actually heard that the Israelites were working their way. Well, God didn't lead them along this way. Scripture said why. Because the Philistines were here. Why God led them out here. And it may have been simply that they were coming from there to fight the Israelites. And two verses written 40 years later, Dan, if you can stick those up for us, tell us why. The first was written by Moses in Deuteronomy. This is looking back, so it's written 40 years later, but looking back at this time. Moses writes, "Remember what the Amalekites did to you on your way when you came out of Egypt. When you were weary and worn out, they met you on your journey and cut off all who were lagging behind. They had no fear of God. And also written, obviously, in a book by Moses as well, but an oracle from a chap called Balaam, who God has given him this vision of what would happen. Balaam saw Amalek and uttered this oracle. Amalek was among the first of the nations, but he will come to ruin at last. What we see in Deuteronomy, they were picking off the wheat at the rear. I don't know. They're picking off the wheat at the rear. We saw these people coming along. And we see in the previous stories before, they were hungry, they were thirsty. And the Amalekites, whilst they were their relatives, distant, albeit, but certainly closer relatives than the Egyptians have been for the last 400 years, came along and they were just picking off the weak at the rear, nicking what they had and killing them. As descendants of Abraham, they would have known the promises of blessing that God had given to his people, the sons of Jacob, rather than Esau. And that by attacking his people, this is showing that the Amalekites had no fear of God. We see also that Balaam wrote, they're among the greatest of the nations. These people would have had, you know, in EastEnders day, a rep. They'd had a reputation. They ruled quite a big area. And yet, by abusing their close relatives, it shows they really didn't fear what God would do to them. Rather than aid their relatives, they abused them. Matthew Henry wrote a famous Bible commentary over 300 years ago. His words, the way it's written, aren't perhaps... Yeah, not really the way we speak today. I do love the way he's written this. Herein they, the Amalekites, bade defiance to that power which had so lately ruined the Egyptians. But in vain did they attack a camp guarded and victualled by miracles. Verily, they knew not what they did. I think Paul writes it better in Romans when he writes, if God is for us, who can be against us? There would be only one winner when the sons of Esau picks a fight with the sons of Jacob. And what we see here is a difference between the people of God and the people not of God. Moses says to Joshua, choose some men and go out and fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hands. So Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses has ordered. This is the same staff that recently had been dipped in the water in Egypt and turned to blood. The same staff that parted the Red Sea. The same rock, the same staff which so recently had brought water from the rock. Logically, the Amalekites would have won this battle. As Balaam wrote, these people had a reputation. They were big enough to have quite a sizable country. And they were properly trained warriors. 6 weeks before, the Israelites had been slaves. They were not a well-drilled, battle-hardened army. It's obviously, ludicrously unlikely that the Egyptians would have allowed them to be running around Egypt with weapons. Only a few weeks before, and we've seen this in the last 2 weeks, they were people who were rebelling already. They've only been liberated as slaves 4 weeks ago. And they're already sulking that they didn't have enough food to eat and water to drink, despite the fact that God had obviously said to them that he would provide for them. This was not the army that 40 years from now would conquest the promised land. This was not the same nation, the armies of which King David, King Saul, would be fighting their way in the area. Who likes Rocky films? Have all of you? Yeah? Have all? Right, who here has never seen a Rocky film? Right, you have your homework. Rocky 3 is the one with Mr. T in it. And it's true that he's not the best of the series, but he starts in this film, he's getting a bit lazy, and Mr. T is really big and strong. Mum, please stay with me on this. And basically, he's going to get beaten. And so what we have here is, he goes and has this montage moment. And we've got 3 minutes, and in 3 minutes' song, he goes from being a rubbish boxer to being a brilliant boxer. Do you know what the song is? It's Eye of the Tiger. There is no Eye of the Tiger moment here. These guys haven't suddenly gone from being slaves to 6 weeks later being the most fantastic battle army people here ready to fight the Amalekites. They're not at all. And they were up against a people who were well-trained warriors, a people who had a reputation. So what happens? Does Joshua say to Moses, well, actually, do you know what? I'm not the right man for this. No, he listens to Moses. He does exactly what Moses tells him to do. He chooses his men. The Bible doesn't tell us how many men. And he goes out and fights the Amalekites. Moses takes a position at the top of the hill with his brother Aaron and a man called Hur, about whom we know nothing. He's only mentioned once else, apart from all once else in the Bible. All it says is that he's from the tribe of Judah. We know nothing about him. And stands at the top of the hill, and he holds aloft the staff of God. Liking this. Make no mistake, it needed a miracle for the Israelites to beat the Amalekites, and a miracle is what they got. And the one difference here is a man standing on top of a hill holding a staff above his head. When Moses couldn't hold his hands up anymore, or hold the staff in his hands up anymore, his brother and Hur first start by holding his hands up for him, then get a, when his legs are beginning to hurt, get a stone for him to sit on and hold his hands up further. When Moses' arms were down, logic reigned. The Amalekites were winning. And yet, when he held his arms up, or his arms were held up for him, the King of Kings intervened for his people, and we saw a miracle. The Israelites were winning. Moses here stands between God and man. There's no mention here that Moses was praying. I don't doubt that he was. But the important thing here is the action. His intercession, his act of mediation here, is the fact that he's standing there with his arms above his head. Had the prayer been a decisive factor, Scripture would have told us so. It doesn't. It says, when his arms were up, they were winning. When his arms were down, they were losing. Without his action here, they would have lost the battle. It had a cost for Moses. It would have hurt. And he obviously needed and thankful for his brother and her support. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword. The difference here was the power of God. Joshua didn't win the battle, despite the fact that we see suddenly a bit of general geniusship that would help lead his people, help the people of God, his people into the promised land. Moses didn't win the battle, despite the fact that he was the one holding his hands up in the air. God stepped into the situation, and God won the battle. And Moses knows this. And in case his people forget it, he builds an altar. The Lord is my banner. In Hebrew, it's called Yahweh Nissi. And it stresses that God is our rallying point. We're not really a bannery people in this generation, are we? How many of you have ever carried a banner, like, proudly? Who's brave enough to say it with your hands sort of like this? Who's, anyone happy to say what it was for? No? That's a no, then. That's how proud we are in our... Oh, really? And you're still really proud of that, aren't you? Yeah, fantastic.
A demonstration.
For who? Against? Oh, okay. And, you know, as a kid, once, I was asked to hold this, like, a March for Jesus kind of thing, through the streets of Manor Park. My brother and I were like this. And I wasn't particularly, it wasn't the highlight of my youth. Possibly the most famous banners were the Roman eagles, carried into war, obviously, by the Romans. It told you where your leader was, because the leader stood, or the banner stood right next to where the leader was. It's a rallying point for the troops. It helps you not to get lost. If you're following the banner, you're following the leader, and you actually know where the army is. Most banners these days state what you stand for. I think that's a really obvious thing. I work opposite Parliament, and we've got demonstrations out there every day of the week almost. And you can never doubt what people are standing for, because all you've got to do is walk past them and you can read quite clearly yes to this or no to this. And people sort of like fight in the name of their banner. And it certainly states what you stand for. With a banner, you know who you're fighting for, certainly if you're under the banner, and you know what you're fighting for. And equally, if you come up against a banner, a group of people that have a banner, you can't doubt what they're standing for or what they're fighting for. Moses knew this. And so that's why he has Yahweh Nissi. The Lord is my banner. It lets the Israelites know they can never think that they're going to win victory in their own strength. About a year later after this, they try and do just that. They've messed up with God. God has said, you know what, you're not going to conquer the promised land at now. And in their own strength, you can read it in Numbers, they march their way into Canaan. They do not get very far at all. They get one battle in which they are humiliated, and they have to come straight back and learn these lessons, that the Lord is our banner, the battle belongs to the Lord, and only in the Lord's strength can we win these things. What's this story tell us about Jesus? 1,470 years after this, 200 miles northeast, a man again would stand at the top of the hill with his bearing the weight of a pole above his head, his arms across. One man similarly standing on one side of him, mediating, interceding between God and man. I don't think there's any coincidence whatsoever that the way Moses stood with his arms above his head at Rephidim mirrors that act of mediation, the act of intervention that Christ did at Calvary. And yet the act of salvation that Christ performed was so much greater than that of Moses. Rephidim was a one-off victory. They'd have many, many more battles as they worked their way into the promised land. The land that God had promised them, it's in the title, promised land, but they would have many more battles to get there. Yet Christ's victory in that battle was supreme. He won it once for all time. Yahweh Nissi, the Lord is our banner. Christ is our banner. Similarly, as with Christ's banner, he's the leader we stand behind. He unites us. He is our rallying point. And in his name, we can claim victory. What's the flip side of this? Christ isn't our banner. And so that's where really where it ties into the Amalekites in this story here. We had the Amalekites here who are not under the Lord's banner, and the Israelites who are. And I certainly know which side I would want to be on. Once again, not in my own strength, not through, you know, Joshua did well. But were it not for being under the Lord's banner, they would have lost that battle. It's the same with Jesus. We're either under his banner or we're not. Christ won a much greater victory than Moses did at Rephidim. The battle at Rephidim had long-lasting ramifications, and we see this from what the text says at the end, that the Lord promises that he will annihilate the Amalekites. He did it over, well, in two stages, 400 years later, with King Saul and King David. One or two Amalekites survived, but as a nation, they were absolutely destroyed. However, Christ's victory has eternal ramifications. To those under his banner, the power of sin, death, and hell are beaten forever. And we have a place guaranteed in heaven, our promised land. It says in Romans, if you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. We have a mediator in Christ who is our banner. So how do we apply this to our lives? First and foremost, know Christ, know the banner. You're hearing some of, this is the gospel bit. If you don't know Christ as your banner, the big thing is, pay attention, not to what I'm saying, I'm bigging myself up here, but to the message behind this that I trust God has given me. That Christ is the banner, in him we get victory in man life so much more. And without him, well, certainly on that day at Rephidim, I know which side I'd want to be on. I'd want to be on the Israelite side, under the banner of God. And not on the Amalekite side, not under the banner of God. We mustn't be ashamed or afraid for people to see us holding the banner of Christ. You know, we should remember the reality that Christ is our banner. You ever have times like where you sort of write again? I suppose you do like preachy things. And you suddenly have that moment where you realise you're speaking to yourself. I can't type. We don't have a computer at home, and I have a voice dictation thing at work. And so I was working on these notes in my lunch break. I wasn't Skyping. That was later in the day. I was working on these notes during my lunch break, and I was dictating them. And see, this whole thing here of pride is the wrong term, but whatever, the Christian pride in the fact that Christ is our banner, of being happy to wave it about that people can see. And actually, when I got to the bit where I'm dictating this bit here, I didn't want people to actually hear me say Christ. Because I was embarrassed at the conversations at the start. People in the office know I'm a Christian. But perhaps I was, perhaps I just didn't really want to start that conflict there and then. And in that moment, I was ashamed of waving Christ as my banner. And that's a poor thing. You know, we're not really a banner. You know, it's not East End culture, is it? walking. This is a point at which you can respond anyway by nodding or shaking your head. We're not, I'm telling you, it's a statement of fact. We're not a band of people in the East End of London. We don't, it's not really something, you know, Cable Street was 70 years ago. We don't really do that kind of thing these days. Last night I was, well, who was watching the boxing, Channel 5 last night? John, without a doubt. Yeah, Trevor as well. I didn't even know it was on. I switched it on and there was this guy who is Irish, of Irish gypsy heritage, and living in Manchester, and he won the British heavyweight belt. And he came into the room, and as soon as the fight was over, he put on, came into the ring wearing a t-shirt, and as soon as the fight was over, he put on a t-shirt again. On the back it said, "Jesus is my friend," or I now know Jesus. Sorry? "I found Jesus." Was that you had a word, or are you actually watching it as well? Yeah. We've got a prophet in the room. Right? "I found Jesus." And the first thing he did when he got out of the ring, and this guy is 6'9" tall. Absolutely huge. Anyway, it wasn't a good fight, but you didn't want to know that now, do you? The first thing he said when he got out of the ring, Mike put in his face, "Now the British and Commonwealth heavyweight champion is, I want to thank my Lord and Saviour Jesus Christ, without whom I couldn't do this here today." We must not be ashamed. We must not be ashamed of Christ. We must not be ashamed of waving Christ around as our banner. We should take Joshua's lead, trusting and obeying and doing what God tells us to do, and not being like the Amalekites, having no fear of God. We want to be like Joshua. And in those days when we're up against it, we can look up to that hill and we can see our Moses figure, better than Moses, we can see Christ, who is died to save us, in whom we already have the victory, who unites us in our faith and gives us the strength to keep on going. On their way to the promised land, the Israelites saw hardship, thirst, hunger, threats, as we've seen here from the Amalekites. In the long run, all would be well. They would reach the promised land, for the Lord was their banner. Joshua remembered this throughout. Sadly, if you read Numbers, you'll see most of the other Israelites seem to forget it. Thankfully, Joshua stayed to task. Ever since Vince asked me to do this talk back in January, I've had the same song from my youth going through my head all the time. Have the words up, Dan. Right, who knows this? Yeah! We're bringing back the 70s here today, guys. As a kid, I was brought up in like a little Brethren church, and it weren't often that we got a chance to sort of wave our arms around. And this is a song, this is one of my favourite songs, one I remember most from my youth. "Joy's a flag flown high in the castle of my heart, for the King is in residence there. So let it fly in the sky, let the whole world know that the King is in residence there." I remember this song really well, because when I was a kid, we were at our church camp, and my mum was standing behind me, and I was singing, "For the King is the President there." And my mum was, because Reagan was on the bottom, I knew who the President was, but her mum said, "It's not, it's like, it's residence." I said, "What's residence?" And she explained it. And I said, "But God is the President of my heart." Well, your mum had no comeback to that. 30 years on, I'm thankful to say, the truth remains. Christ is still the President of my heart. This has come through my head because of the last bit. "Let it fly in the sky, let the whole world know that the King is in residence there." Let's never be ashamed. You know, I say, just doing this week has been a lesson to me. Let's never be ashamed that Christ is our banner. Let's stand up and let the whole world see that the King is in residence there. Cheers.